This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 186. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners.
Hello, hello, hello.
Berners, Garras, how's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, very good. I had a little jaunt down your way, Garras, to Wellington School.
Okay.
To see our friend Steph Jones.
And how was that?
Yeah, very good. He spent 4 hours doing weight training in front of a camera for me.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I kept saying to him, don't you want me to, I can demonstrate some of these if you like. I can do all of these things. You don't have to do it all. No, I'll do it all. So he spent 4 hours just lifting up weights, which I probably wouldn't be able to touch. And he was just doing that, you know, to demonstrate.
Was he twice the size come the end?
Yeah, I think he was. Yeah.
He's a big boy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's rugby background, so yeah, he certainly knows how to train up those Wellington schoolboys on cricket and rugby. Of course, the rugby guys are all massive, so they're the talk of the region at the moment for just knocking people over, by the sounds of it.
Oh, very good, very good. I'm not sure when our first 15 get to play them, so I'll have to keep an eye out for that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, keep an eye out and steer clear. It looks like 15 Incredible Hulks.
Yeah. Flat packing the posts. They'll be biting their way through your air bubble, Gareth.
They can try, mate. They can try. I've got all sorts of booby traps around that baby.
We were talking about, Gareth, you were talking about on the website last week about watching the ball. And how there's research now which says that not everyone has to watch the ball closely, as we often say as coaches to people, which was an interesting thing in itself. But we got a comment from someone saying that following up on that, saying that he doesn't see the aspects of vision, or watching the ball intently and watching the ball with peripheral vision as mutually exclusive, because you can use both. Did you see that comment? And
I did. Yeah, I was very interested in it, and some fantastic points brought up, and also some points which quite rightly challenge what is a very, very not particularly well known. Concept, theory, and actually research practice now that only very few of us in the game have had the opportunity to have access to. So the questions that were put across in that piece, that I think was it Dave that wrote?
That's right. Yeah,
they're,
Dave it was.
The sort of questions that I expect to get back, to be honest with you. So thank you very much is the first thing I'd say for those. And as any decent coach that wants to put their neck on the line like I did with an article like that, it's important that A, they get challenged properly, and secondly, that they can back it up. So I can have a go at that if you want me to, because there are some really interesting points raised in Dave's piece.
Yeah, I think so, purely because you're coming from left field on certainly what is traditionally spoken about to coaches, and certainly what is taught to coaches as well. So, you know, whether that's formally taught or passed on from player to coach or whatever. So, what's your view on the comments that we've had?
Well, I mean, the first one is that I'll sort of ask a question back of you two, if that's all right. How important is balance when we're batting and fielding?
Crucial.
Okay, and how important is the ability to make decisions based on either subconscious things or conscious things?
Well, if you can't make a decision, you can't do anything, can you? So, vital.
Okay, so the whole premise of the article that I wrote was that we all have a preference for the type of vision that we are both more balanced in, and also gives us the best opportunity to make appropriate decisions, whether those be subconsciously or consciously. So the article isn't about how we track the ball on the way down as such. Mm. It's how we gather information in and how we're in our best balance position and in our best position to make decisions, which I think everybody who's involved in cricket would say are two fundamentally important things within the game, particularly when it comes to batting and fielding, which are open skills, you know, where you're relying on being able to pick up information to be able to make those decisions. So that's what that's about, really. It's not necessarily how the eyeball as a being in itself tracks balls or tracks movement. It's not necessarily about that as such, although it does have implications on that. So, for example, if you're a Kevin Peterson, obviously a coach on our site, then when Kevin's playing at his best and he's the most balanced and he's making appropriate decisions, he's somebody who has to study the ball really, really well and study it hard. And I'll give you an example of that. We're in Sri Lanka in 2008 playing in a one-day series, and Dilhara Fernando was causing all sorts of havoc with his slower ball, which is a split-finger slower ball, which he pushes the ball up through his fingers as his bowling arm's pushing out towards the batter just before it bowls. He bowls the ball. And every time he bowled the slower ball to everybody else, they were getting out or it was a dot ball. And every time they bowled it, the Kev hit him for 4 or 6. So I asked the question in a team meeting, how are you picking up that? And he said, well, he's standing at the end of his mark and I can see that his fingers are about 2 millimetres apart, 3 millimetres apart when he's going to bowl his slower ball to prepare the ball to go up through his fingers. And when he bowls his stop ball, his fingers are absolutely closed together. And of course, there was conjecture around the room of how the hell can you see that? There's no way in the world that you can see that and all of that. And what tended to happen over the next few days, ironically, is that is the way that Kev sees the ball. He's a narrow focuser. And that's when he's at his best balanced and best decision making. And somebody like a Graham Swan, for example, couldn't see that that was possible because he's complete opposite. So when he's at his best, when he bats, he watches out for the visual cues that are around. So he tried to do the Kev thing, and it felt really, really weird to him because it threw him out of balance and threw his decision-making off.
It's funny that you say that, because certainly from my experience, Berners, I don't know if you're the same with this, but Berners, perhaps we could bring you in on this as well. Certainly from my experience, always been told to watch the ball closely. That's never felt right. I've never felt like I can do that. And I always felt like I'm at my best, whether it's batting or wicket-keeping, when I'm taking in a more general view of what's going on. And certainly when I'm, for example, keeping to a leg spinner, I kind of just know when he's bowled a googly rather than being able to pick out any particular aspect of his action that's changed. The second the googly comes out, I just think to myself, I can see that as a googly. So I think I'm probably more of a peripheral person. Berners, which one would you say you are?
Well, you want, I guess the same. You taught to watch the ball. So I think to myself to watch the ball, but maybe I shouldn't be thinking about watching the ball. And that should be, you know, my subconsciousness should come in and I should actually be thinking about being balanced and making a decision. Which will then provide me to, you know, hit the ball in a slightly different way than if I was just thinking about, you know, watching the ball, which I guess they're going down the aspect of that if you watch the ball, you're probably going to make contact and giving yourself a better chance of actually playing a shot, when, as Gareth has just explained, you're probably not actually, because you're probably blocking other components that need to take place for you to be able to do that, i.e. being balanced. You know, if you watch the ball and you're suddenly playing with your arms and your feet miles away from the ball, that's probably not great, is it? So,
But that's a great point in itself, Berners, is that for some people to make contact with the ball, and it's based around these things that we're talking about here, it's actually more advantageous to do it because they have better control when they play the ball out in front of themselves. Whereas for the general consensus of cricket coaching around the world is that you play the ball late under your eyes, and we've all coached that. And and yet you see players like Amla, you see players like Peterson, who actually have more control when they take the ball out in front of themselves. And we see that really well nowadays on the Hawkeye contact points, the interception points that we see on the television in relation to their body, where they're making contact a lot earlier than other players would make. And it's all down to this sort of stuff.
And but that's all to do with the position that they've got themselves in to be able to execute that, right?
Well, it is, but it's not, you know, because you'd make the assumption would be that Kevin Peterson can do it because he's 6 foot six and a half and got arms and long arms and long legs, so he can get out and reach. But that's not the thing at all. It's not about his height. It's a combination of how he stands and then how he watches the ball, which enables him to do that.
And this is not just a theoretical thing. As you put in the article, and anyone who hasn't seen the article, I'll put a link to it in the show notes of this show so you can get up to date with that. There are absolute practical things that you can do either as a coach or as a player to find out which one of these two ways of watching the ball comes best to you, and then you can work on improving whichever one it is that you are that you're doing, and you'll find that you'll be playing in a more natural manner.
Correct. Absolutely spot on. And the drill that we've put in that article, David, is one that I really encourage every coach that's listening to the show and every player to do, because they will find out something about themselves which they didn't know before, or it might confirm that when they're playing at their best, that's exactly what they do. And the whole idea of this is when you're not playing at your best, that you can quickly stop it and you can apply the thing that you know, not that you're speculating, but you know works for you. And that's what the best players do. So they don't have those peaks and troughs that most of us as good club players or, you know, average county players had throughout our careers. So it's a really good tactic, not just for learning about yourself, but also as a strategy for when it isn't going so well, and you can break that cycle and then kick yourself back up into playing as well as you can do in that natural way that you talk about.
Well, let's leave it there. There's a lot more to talk about there. And hopefully if people are listening, they'll be able to send in their own questions, their own comments, and you can do that at coach@pitchvision.com. But let's finish up there and let's go on to our yes, no round, which will conclude our introduction this week. So Berners, you've got the questions this week, three questions. Gareth and I can only answer yes or no to them. And then we'll move into the questions section on the other side.
Okay, first question. Raina should bat at six in India's test side.
Yes.
Yes.
Question two. Nick Compton should open for England's test side.
Yes.
Yeah.
Question three. Dhoni's captaincy has become too inflexible.
Yes.
No.
It's time now for us to open the mailbag and to dip inside with a couple of questions that have been sent in. And the best question of the week, of course, wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, what are the two questions you've got this week vying for the prize?
The first question comes in from Prayatam, and he's asking about using weighted balls in training, and he's not really clear about this concept, so he's just asking for a couple of ideas of, I'm guessing, how they can best be used and what they can do to help bowlers out.
Now, funny enough, I had a long discussion this week, or last week, I should say, with Stephen Jones regarding using heavier balls for bowling purposes. It's something that's been used in baseball for quite a while, but it's not really that well documented or used in cricket circles. But Steph is a big proponent of it, and he was telling me he's been trying these methods with different weights of balls and different ways of doing things for many years, and he's a big fan of using a heavier ball, going up to quite a significant increase in weight compared to what a lot of people say. And the reason is, of course, that if you use a heavier ball, the idea being that is that you get stronger if you're comparing that to using a lighter ball. So when you go back to an actual normal weight ball, then you feel like it's a lot lighter than it actually is.
Yeah, well, I mean, I first came across it around the same time as Steph, actually, because he was I was working with him at Somerset, and it all came around as it did at the same time around the SAQ stuff that Steph went into in a really big way, actually, and became a market leader within cricket doing. So yeah, I've used it a fair bit. Probably not as much as Steph, I have to say. Being more of a general coach rather than as a fast bowling coach, where I think it has huge benefits. I think again, as Steph is getting more experience at using it, it's the level that you go to. And I was really interested to hear you talk about keeping the action together. So go as heavy as you can whilst keeping the action together. I think that's one really important point. The other important point is the volume that you do before you then go back onto bowling the ball as well, bowling a normal cricket ball as well. And I think that's something that I'd be very keen on getting right, although at the moment I wouldn't have the data or the research to say what is the numbers and what are the numbers and what should you look for to make sure that there's a balance between the numbers of balls you're bowling with the heavy ball and with a normal cricket ball, because we can't get away from the fact that skill is really important as well as power. Mm-hmm. And we still need to be able to hit length, we still need to be able to hit Yorkers, and we still need to be able to hit a bumper as a fast bowler.
Yeah, and it ties in because if you think, because of the way that weighted balls are more, you're moving more towards into the strength and conditioning field by using the balls and away from the skill field, although it's a little bit of both. You also have to bear in mind that the rest of the work that you're doing in terms of strength and conditioning. So you can't just bowl with a weighted ball and think, right, that's my strength and conditioning sorted. You also have to look at throwing a medicine ball, because that's, you're moving a little bit more than, you're moving totally then into the strength and conditioning field if you're throwing a medicine ball around. Not bowling it, but you're throwing it in different ways of throwing it, like a chest pass or a side pass, things like that. And then also moving right to the other end of the continuum, where you're just looking at the pure strength side of it. So you're looking at the weight training that you're doing and the strength training that is, you know, doesn't look anything like bowling at all, the stuff that you're doing in the gym. And that is an important aspect that goes into it as well. So you have to look at the entire continuum. What's the next question, Berners?
Next question is in from Fraser in the Highlands in Scotland. And Fraser is a left-arm Chinaman bowler, which is left-arm leg spin, for anyone wondering. And he's playing lower-level cricket there. He's looking to move through the ranks. And he's saying that he's realised that there's a new trend of traditional left-arm spinners that are being prevalent in limited-over cricket, 2020, that kind of thing. And he's wondering what our views were on Chinaman bowling and whether it can be effective. Also, the lack of knowledge out there. He's saying that it's very, you know, not very often that you come across someone who knows about it or that actually does it. Executes in a game or training. He makes an example of Brad Hogg being pretty much the only guy out there at the moment that seems to be bowling it commercially, so to speak. So just wants to know if we've got any ideas and any tactics that we can potentially provide him with.
Well, before I throw to you on this one, Gareth, I will say that if you're a left arm leg spin bowler or a Chinaman bowler, then if you come across most left-handers at club level, you'll absolutely bamboozle them, because they never see that. So as long as you can turn the ball and you're reasonably accurate, then you're going to get a lot of left-handers out at club level. But Gareth, have you got more on that?
Yeah, you'd probably get a few right-handers out as well. That would be the first thing I'd say on that.
Yeah.
I mean, the interesting one for you're right, there aren't very many out there, and there haven't been for quite a long time, actually. So, you know, the ones that I remember playing international cricket would be your part-timers more than your actual sort of like bona fide specialist Chinaman bowlers. So I'm thinking about the likes of Simon Katic is one, and the likes of Michael Bevan is another, rather than anybody that can stand out other than Brad Hogg. So, well done, Australia, on developing three anyway, because I can't remember any others around the world off the top of my head. But let's learn from Brad Hogg, because he's obviously had a renaissance recently. And there's a reason for that, because it is different. So it's an advantage. So firstly, I say, Fraser, good on you, mate. Stick at it, because if you keep your passion and keep doing what you're doing, and I should imagine you're going to go through the ranks of Scottish cricket very, very quickly. So that's a good thing. The other thing is also that you're going to have more experience than most people in Chinaman bowling. By looking at Brad Hogg, what does he do? He gets little bits of spin both ways, and also he bowls from over the wicket, left arm over the wicket at right-handers, which takes the ball naturally across their eyes, and then to get spin both ways causes right-handers a great deal of problems. Then David talks about the left-handers as well, and you get things like the rough that you can bowl the ball into, and also the mystery that you've got. So use that angle well. Very rarely would I encourage a left-arm Chinaman bowler to bowl around the wicket. Very rarely, because you lose that angle, particularly on right-handers. What Brad does very well is he holds his length well. So that means that he can only really get hit in one or two areas unless a batsman takes a huge risk. A huge risk either being sitting back in the crease and trying to pull off of length, or a huge risk in coming down the wicket and trying to guess which way the ball's spinning. Even if they're picking it, then they've still got the field then that they have to clear or miss. So field placing has become really different and really important for you as a bowler. So in and outfield, I would say, so get your catchers right, get your deep fielders right. And generally, a Chinaman bowler, because of a mystery, because batters tend to go to a bit of a slog when they don't know what's going on, or a bit of a sweep. So deep mid-wicket is a massively important area for any Chinaman bowler, whether it be against a left-hander or a right-hander. So make sure you get the right person in those positions. Make sure you get a good slip, and make sure you get two good drive men either side of a wicket at straight mid-wicket and straight extra cover, because those guys, when you're bowling well, are going to be in the game massively, both from a run-saving perspective and also from a catching perspective as well. But as I say, you'll get very, very good at understanding your bowling better than anybody else. So review really, really well. Get your key men in key positions. Work out where you get hit and then block those areas off. And then you'll find that batters will try and manipulate the ball or try and hit ball into areas where you know that you've got a great chance of getting a wicket. But if I had a Chinaman in my side that could do any of those things, then I'd be bowling them heaps and I'd be sort of supporting them heaps. So you've got a great chance in the game.
And don't forget your deep backwards square leg, your waist high full bunger. That's your banker. After you've tied him down for five tireless overs, turning it both ways and causing him all kinds of destruction, just float one in above the eye line and he'll drill it straight down deep backwards throat.
And many a wicket's been taken like that at every level of the game. It's not a bad bit of advice there, that Berners, I have to say.
Yeah, if you're gonna bowl a bad ball, a straight full toss is one of the best bad balls you can bowl. There's so many ways to get out to it, isn't there?
And we've all done it.
Oh yeah, because you think, you know, your eyes light up, don't they? You think, oh well, you know, this is four or six, and often the case it's not quite as easy as you think it is. So. You know, especially if you miss it altogether. You look very silly then.
One of the other points that he makes is about the prevalence towards left arm, normal finger spin left arm in one day cricket. I don't think it's necessarily because it's better. I just think because there's less of you guys around, which make you unique. So Fraser, just keep doing what you're doing, all right? Because at some stage, you're going to find that you're going to get a game when left arm other orthodox spinners won't, because you'll offer something completely different. And certainly if anybody's listening who works with Fraser, either as a captain or as a coach, stick with him, all right? Support him as best as you possibly can. Get your fields right for him. If he gets smacked, then just keep encouraging him, all right? Because that's the best way to go with any spinner, let alone a Chinaman.
The best captains are the ones that sort of can have the confidence to back a spinner and know the difference between when he's getting smashed because he's bowling badly and when he's doing something which is going to create a wicket, even if he's going for fives or sixes in a 50 over match for a couple of overs. You know it's just as great an art captaining in a spinner as it is actually bowling the spin itself, I think, sometimes.
No, I agree, and I mean, we've talked about it before, but my dad was a coaching captain to Danny Briggs when he first started bowling spin. I know it's orthodox left arm, but he always used to say whenever Danny as a youngster bowling against men was getting hoyed out the ground, is that the reason why he's getting hoyed out the ground is to create the deception that will end up getting him a wicket. And very often, and there's some quite interesting scorebooks that teams on the Isle of Wight have taken pictures of Danny's first few games, actually. because he's now played for England and everybody's very proud of him on the Isle of Wight, that there's a huge prevalence towards boundaries followed by wickets in his bowling. Now, if my dad or whoever else captained at the time would have just taken him off as soon as he got hit for a six, then he wouldn't have had that wicket-taking ability and wouldn't have had that experience early in his life. And with Fraser being a spinner and bowling left-arm Chinaman, which is a more difficult thing to do than bowl left-arm orthodox, he needs that support. So if you can follow that way that Danny Briggs was encouraged through his captains, then that's only going to support Fraser really well.
This week's soapbox is Mark Garraway. He gets 60 seconds uninterrupted to talk about anything that he likes, as long as it's got something to do with cricket. So, Gareth, over to you for this week's soapbox.
As I said last week, I went up to the new FA headquarters and went to a convention there, which was all about a conference, which was all about challenging convention. And some of the things we've discussed today, actually, which is about how we look at the ball and the preferences that people have, which impacts upon their decision-making and also their balance, which are two key things. So this information we've got going at school quite a lot, and a number of other coaches have become quite interested in the work that we're doing with these kids. And some of them go for it, and some of them don't go for it. And what I would say is that we should always give things a go, particularly if it's backed up by science, which is one. And just because we've been taught to watch the ball, or we have to lead with our head and shoulder going into the ball when we drive, we should also challenge ourselves, because there's a lot of players out there, Amber and Peterson, for example, who don't lead with their shoulder. So instead of being threatened by challenging convention, we should embrace it. And that's my message this week.
That's the end of the show for this week. Before we go, we've got a couple of things we just need to sort out. We need our competition winner for the week. So, Gareth, we have weighted balls and Chinaman bowlers. Which one did you prefer this week, Fraser or Priyatam?
I'm going to go with Priyatam this week because it's something that's linked into a meeting and the courses that you're putting together with Stephen Jones. And I think that as a coach, I don't know enough about that, weighted balls. I understand the concept, but I'm really interested in what we can learn from Steph in using weighted balls and other training methods. So Priyatam took me to challenging my own conventions a little bit. I'm going to go with him this week.
Congratulations, Priyatam. Hopefully you can use the information that you get in the online coaching course to help with your bowling, and perhaps you have a little experiment with weighted balls while you're at it as well. Now, bonus, if somebody wanted to send in their own question with their chance to win a prize and get the question answered on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, how would they get in touch with us?
Give us a call, the number 020-88-167-691. Or drop us an email, and the address for that is coach@pitchvision.com.
You can also get us on Twitter at PB Cricket Coach, and you can find us on Facebook, Pitch Vision Academy. If you want to listen to the show every week, then you can subscribe in iTunes. It's free. If you search Pitch Vision Academy in there, you'll find us. And if you don't want to do that, you can get the RSS feed with the podcast in it from pitchvision.com/academy. Just click on the podcast link and follow the instructions there. Now, I put a call out for a tail ender this week, and I didn't get anything too exciting. Swinging like a rusty gate was the best thing I got on Twitter this week for a tail ender. But I think everybody knows that one, don't they? That's not a new one, is it?
No, certainly not.
No, exactly. And there was an unsavoury one, which you will find if you search on our Twitter, but I'm not going to say it because it was very unsavoury. So, Berners, you're normally good for a tail end. Have you got anything lurking around in that brain of yours?
Not off the top of my head. We had hose pipe last week.
I very much
enjoyed that. That was a really good one. I've got one. It's not really a, I suppose it's a tail ender, but I'm really interested in cricket tragics and cricket badges.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know whether that's something that you guys have come across. I'm sure we're probably all of us are those things in our own heads and many other people, I should imagine. But I once had a meeting with John Howard, the ex-Australian Premier, who is a self-confessed cricket tragic. And we went up there and played a game for England against the Prime Minister's 11. And he asked me what I did, and I said, "Oh, I'm the analyst for the England cricket team." He said, "Oh, an analyst." He said, "We've got 22 million cricket analysts over here, so you should be all right." which I thought was quite funny. But then he went on to say, you know, how much he loved cricket and how much he called himself a cricket tragic. I went to, I did an interview with Jason Gillespie recently for his Level 4 and coaching award, and he called himself a cricket tragic as well. And I think so. The Australian seems to be tragic. The English one, somebody like a Paul Nixon, would definitely be a cricket badger. So I wanted to know whether you've heard that or if you've got any good cricket badges in your cricket clubs, lads.
Yeah, well, I wrote an article a little while back called, I can't remember the exact, I'm going to have to look that up, but I wrote an article on how being a cricket badger would help your cricket. And I referred to once when we did a Pitch Vision Academy live event up in Newcastle a couple of years ago now, when myself and Stacey Harris, who is author on the Pitch Vision Academy site of her book, her guides to cricket for women who don't know anything about cricket. We almost missed our train because we were stood at the station drinking coffee and just talking about cricket. We had to run for the train, and she was wearing high heels, so it can be quite dangerous being a cricket badger sometimes.
We've got an ultimate cricket badger at our club, a guy who plays in the first team called Milo Wilkin, and he'll play for the first team. If they finish early, he'll come back and he'll quite happily score for the second team.
Brilliant.
That's top draw badgering, Matt.
He'll come quite happily score. He's also been known to travel to, for example, if the first 11 game was over and then another team was short and we're going pretty much down to the fifth here, he's been known to travel to that particular ground, don his whites and field for them.
That's amazing.
Can only be explained as one hell of a boy. Milo, if you're listening, I love you, pal.
Well, I think what we've come to here is a conclusion that we should embrace the cricket badges.
Yeah, you need the outliers, don't you? You need the people at the extreme ends, otherwise you can't be safely ensconced in the middle and feel secure that you're not that bad.
Definitely.
So that's all for this week. So until next week, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, coach. Cheers, guys.